on 98FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
That was Sugarland with It Happens. The track was released as a third single from their album Love on the Inside. The Duo's members, Jennifer Nettles and Christian Bush, wrote the song alongside Bobby Pinson, with whom the duo also co-wrote the album's first two singles. Those singles were called All I Want to Do and Already Gone. To date, this is Sugarland's last number one song. You're listening to Night Shift on Phoenix 98 FM, your weekly dose of country music each and every Thursday night, 10 p.m. until midnight. On tonight's broadcast, I'll be discussing what makes country music country with Chelmsford modern country artist Louise Parker. She is currently working on some new music following her The Imperfect Recovery EP released last year. She'll be featuring on the show at 10:30 p.m. In the meantime, I'm going to share with you all a song that has been getting a lot of major buzz lately. This track has been through TikTok and Instagram for a few weeks now. It's now the first official new release since her debut breakout LP called Lucky, an album that landed number one on Rolling Stone's 25 Best Country and Americana Albums of last year. This is Megan Maroney with No Caller ID.
I'm back on my feet. I'm doing more than getting by. I've been seeing stand-up guys the middle of the night, and my phone starts ringing. And here you come again, and there you go. be. I don't need to see a name. Who else would drunk on me this late? Surprise, surprise, you haven't changed. I'm sure you're sure I'll pick up and I shouldn't want to.
You need a break from breaking my heart.
Breaking My Heart by Mitchell Timpani. This track was penned by Mitchell alongside Ashley Gawley, Chase McGill and Jordan Schmidt. Mitchell was inspired to write the song following a real life breakup of his, saying, "I remember once during the breakup I just kept seeing her specific car, the same make, model and colour all the time. They were just driving around me every day. I couldn't escape it. So that concept was what I thought about when I came up with ideas for this song. Breaking My Heart by Mitchell Timpani on the night shift there for you. Do stay tuned, as shortly we'll be featuring very special guest Louise Parker. We're going to be diving into the stories behind some of the tracks of her latest concept EP called The Imperfect Recovery and her time in Nashville and Texas. So be sure to stick around for that. We're going to play for you now a new release by Jennifer Hutchinson. At 16 years old, he auditioned for NBC's The Voice and ended up on Team Pharrell Williams. On the show, he shared his struggles with hearing loss. He began wearing hearing aids at the age of 2 years old. Nonetheless, he gravitated towards music. Here's his latest release for you now. This is Jennifer Hutchinson with Out of Here.
I'll be honest with you, baby, I'm about to go crazy. It's too fast around here, I'm losing my mind. Where God meets the ground, that's what's gonna save me. Once you see me walk that county line, I'm tired of living this day to day. Baby, would it be okay to get out of here? Find us a way on out this town. With a cricket to the river are the only sound. Go a little missing and disappear. Get out of our head, out of ourselves. Baby, let's get on out. Always said you loved a little bit of danger. Let me take you somewhere to break in them wranglers. Put the bags in the back and hit that road. Say the word and we'll go and get out of here. Find us a way on out of this town. With a cricket to the river are the only sound. We drive on out of here. Find us a way on out of this town. Crickets in the river are the only sound.
Everybody's got their little slice of heaven. Mine's in the Georgia pines, 7 miles east of a Wildcat Creek. You think it'll pass you by? Granddaddy walked barefoot up and down this road. Now I am too. I'm learning how to live, walking this dirt where he was walking to school.
Like that old oak tree. Oh, you're running my blood built in.
lies in the Georgia pines. Oh, number 7 road, won't you take me home? Won't you take me out there where my roots run deep, strong just like that old oak tree?
Louise Parker, how are you this evening?
Hey, Madeline, I'm so good. Thank you so much for inviting me on. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I've been really, really looking forward to like asking you like all my like weird and wonderful questions, getting to know you more. And I saw in it was actually another interview you speaking about playing guitar and kind of what kind of age you were when you first started writing songs. So you started writing songs kind of roughly at the age of 12. You then taught yourself the guitar when you were 16. Yeah. The first few songs that you taught yourself that you learned on guitar?
So I was really hugely inspired by Katy Perry and Taylor Swift, two very strong female personalities that both played acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
I think I'd gotten to a stage in my writing where I wanted to start being able to support myself so I didn't have to depend on anyone else to be on stage with me. Like I could just go out and do it myself. And seeing these two strong characters in Katy Perry and Taylor Swift just doing it and being badass. I was like, I want to do that. And so the first song I learned was Thinking of You by Katy Perry, which is not an easy song to learn. I have no idea why I picked it out. And then I literally went through Taylor Swift's back catalogue.
Yep.
Literally, I think Mean by Taylor Swift is probably one of the first ones I learned, because I love that song. There is something about it that really resonates with me.
And so you just said, you mentioned Katy Perry, you mentioned Thinking of You. Mm-hmm. And there's this really, really special performance that she does back in 2009 where it is literally just her and her guitar. And like,
yes,
she's absolutely stunning. She sounds stunning as well. She's even got her hair done in the same style as the music video. What was it about that performance that stood out to you?
It's so raw. And I think, obviously, Katy Perry became really, really famous, and she was known for being incredibly beautiful, an incredible singer, these really catchy bops. About that performance, where it's not about the fact that she is incredibly beautiful. As you said, like, she is. She looks incredible. Like, her dress that she's wearing in that. I just can't stop thinking about it. Even now, as you said, it was in 2009, but it's something that's this day, as you said, I still quote as being like one of the reasons that I wanted to pick up a guitar after seeing this performance. It's so raw and vulnerable and emotional. And there was something about it that made me think, wow, like, this one person can captivate a whole audience, not just live, but in video, me sitting behind my computer screen, watching it on YouTube. I am captivated by this one person. How incredible is that? She didn't need, you know, the fireworks, you know, the pyrotechnics, the band. She didn't need all that. She could have stood on stage in her pajamas, sung it. I still think I would have been as captivated as I was.
Now, it's one of the few songs that Katy Perry actually wrote solely by herself.
Yes.
And that was from her One of the Boys kind of like era time. When you then see her move into her Teenage Dream album, that's obviously where she gets like hit after hit. We start to then start to see more of her working in like sometimes even like teams of up to six songwriters per song. On another podcast I was speaking about on the show last week, singer-songwriter Hardy, he spoke about how like he doesn't care if he has like six or seven or even eight writers on the song, if it means that it can be an amazing song and he can jump on it. What's your kind of outlook on co-writing, especially if it does get up to those big numbers of like six, seven and eight people?
So I've never worked on a track with more than two or three people writing wise. I've kind of worked with, say, one other person, so there's two of us. And then maybe like when it comes to production, there might be like a further one or two people. And then I might play it to my band and see what they see what their inputs are and their suggestions. No, absolutely no qualms about writing. Like you said with Hardy, if it makes an incredible song, it doesn't bother me how many people it takes. I don't think, you know, they say like too many chefs in a kitchen.
Yeah.
I don't believe that with songwriters. I think sometimes the more input, the better, because I've been writing for a long time, over half my life. I've been writing for 18 years. But there's still the experiences and the way that I phrase things and words that I use. You can always tell if I've written a song by myself because it will have a Disney reference in it. You know, something like that, or I mention the stars quite a lot in songs that I write myself. So sometimes when you bring someone else in, say something that isn't kind of my opinion or my experience, it really mixes up a song. And I think you can tell the songs that I've co-written because they are not like the other songs I've released, and that makes it so special, that little spark that you can't quite put your finger on.
Yeah, and I think songwriting is quite interesting because it is sometimes put under such a microscope of how many people wrote this, what was their input, but no one really says that about movies or films. Like, I've never ever seen a film where someone has written it, starred in it, it's a one man kind of show thing. However, for songwriters, I know, I feel like there's a lot of heat sometimes of like, if you haven't written it completely by yourself, if you haven't played every instrument on there, then kind of like, what's going on? I mean, like when we spoke about Taylor Swift earlier and how much you liked Mean, she had to remake a point with that album of being the only songwriter because she came under such heat with the Fearless album of, oh, maybe it's not her, maybe it's someone else that's making these songs great. But like you said, like if it takes like six or so people to make a hit song, I'm sure people who listen to music would rather have like a really, really wonderful song that's written by like even 10 people than be like, I know this person wrote it by themselves, but it is not good.
I think, I mean, that's the reason whenever I'm producing a song that I play it to my band, because I'm very aware that there are things that I am good at. A drummer. I am not a bass player. I can't play, well, I can play keys, you know, I can play all instruments a little bit, but it's not my forte. Yeah. My band are so good at what they do. Why wouldn't I ask them? Like, I think that'd be really naive and ignorant of me to be like, no, I know best. Because I don't. When it comes to little things, like my drummer, I'll play him a track. My producer is amazing, Paul. He is a drummer as a first instrument, but he's also a singer, songwriter, guitar player, you know, very well-rounded, talented, or, you know, one of those people that does everything amazingly. Play our tracks to say, my drummer, he says, okay, the snare's too quiet on this exact timing. And I'm like, is it? How do I know that? Because I'm not a drummer. Like, I can play drums, but I don't listen to the exact instruments like my musicians do.
Yeah.
And they're so good at their jobs.
I'm a little bit drunk. I've had one too many. Can you pick me up? Back to the place where we fell in love, between the sheets on the first floor, a place I've been so many times before. It's been so long since you let me walk out the door with no reason and so many lies in between. But if I drunk out your number, would you pick up the phone? And I know I should know better than leave well enough alone. But could you tell me the truth? Are you better off without? Oh, Henry, I'm a little bit drunk. Can you help me out? You broke my heart, but isn't that how all good love stories start? The hero always finds a way to stop them falling apart. And in the end, they all ride off into the sunset.
Major thing that seems to be commented on is people who are really into country music, people who want to make their own country music, making that really big step to that 10-year town of Nashville, which you took that step yourself a few years ago. When exactly did you move to Nashville? What was kind of going on at the time?
So I visited after I graduated university. Me and a friend kind of went off on a 3-month acoustic tour, both solo artists. She was a bit more folky pop. I was very acoustic pop at the time. I wasn't a country singer. And we did this 3-month tour just playing open mic nights around North America. And one of the places we visited was Nashville. And we did Austin, Texas, and then Nashville, and then New York, and then flew home. And I think we spent 2 or 3 weeks in Nashville. And we made friends. You know, we stayed in a hostel. We were all doing really cheap. We like noodles and chicken. It was like a really, really cheap tour. And we made friends and loved it so much. That was in 2014. And so the next year I went back for a couple of weeks to see my friends again and do some more open mic nights. And it kind of got the following year, so like 2016, I think it was autumn 2016, I thought, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it properly. And I thought, I'm going to move to Nashville. I'd applied for a special 6-month visa. It was a tourist visa, so I couldn't work. I couldn't earn money, but I could live out there for 6 months. And so I did. So that was kind of like autumn 2016 till spring 2017 till I had to be deported.
So you've experienced Nashville. You've also briefly mentioned that you experienced Texas as well. You experienced yes. Austin in Texas. How would you say Texas differs from Tennessee in like terms of culture, the way people are, maybe the music scene?
I think Tennessee, Nashville in particular, I would say, because I've not been a lot of Tennessee. Like, I've been to Nashville and a little bit of the Smoky Mountains, you know, Gatlinburg out east. And then obviously I've been to Graceland and seen Elvis Presley's home in Memphis. But Nashville in particular has so many people from different walks of life that have done exactly what I did. I made so many Australian friends who had got green cards and were out there working, and not even from across oceans, like so many North Americans or like Canadians. I made lots of Canadian friends that were there doing what I was doing because they loved music so much they wanted to immerse themselves into it. And so that being said, I found Nashville very cultural, but it's also very commercial. And so a lot of people, country music fans, it being the home of country music, will go there and all the bars play covers.
Yeah.
A lot of the bars, especially in the downtown strip, will do covers. But I found that when I lived in Austin, in Texas, they loved original music. And that's not to say that Nashville doesn't. There was a couple of hubs for original music where they couldn't get enough and they loved it. But you do find it's more commercial because that is what the consumer, the people, the country music fans go there yeah. for. And I get that. And they make great money doing that on the strip. But I went to Austin, Texas, and because it's not like that, people don't really go to Texas. I mean, maybe for a cowboy, but I did at the time. I went there and found myself a cowboy. So it wasn't about that. You know, you kind of went and you did the original music and people were like, this is amazing. Like, where can I buy this?
Yeah.
And they were really into that. And it could be like, we used to drive like 30 minutes out of Austin from like an open mic night, and you still found people that just loved what you were doing. Original music like locals, and I love that about Texas.
And you say about original music there, you actually released a lot of original music over the past few years. You have an album called Living in Silver Linings. You released it back in 2021. Yeah. It actually begins, the whole album, it begins with actually the ending of a relationship with a track called Rearview Mirror. Why did you decide to start the album in kind of like this like ending kind of way?
So I love Rearview Mirror. It's probably one of my favourite songs I've ever written. And I think it's the most, like, country rock, the closest to Shania Twain I've ever come.
Yep.
And I love Shania Twain. And I think in my mind at that time when I was doing a set list, I don't know if you've ever had to do anything like that, but it is so difficult to build a set list when you've got, like, songs and you're thinking about where things go. Because at the time it was, like, my favourite song. And I knew that it was a popular song. It's a song that gained me a lot of my fans in the country scene. It's kind of what I really, like, launched my country career with. I wanted to put it first to, like, draw people in. Because I knew that they'd love Legend. I knew that they'd love it as much as, because I'd elongated it and given it this badass epic guitar solo, and it had this talking on it like Shania Twain does in some of her tracks.
Yep.
I just wanted people to buy this first track as much as I am.
You sued my rearview mirror, honey. There's a picture I could frame and sit you on my bedside table night and day. You thinking you'll pick me up in that rusty truck? We'll drink some beer and laugh it off. It don't work that way, nah. 'Cause my mama didn't raise no saint, but my daddy won't allow a sinner. I guess we'll find out the hard way. You sued my rearview mirror, honey. Now there's a picture I can frame, sit you on my bedside table night and day. One shot, get in my dust, you're long forgotten. I thought we had it all, but I was wrong. You were on the other side of town having fun. Ooh, and that's not all. I guess you thought it would be fine when you said her name instead of mine. It's a long way to fall. Yes, suit my
So this year, I feel like it's going to be a really big year for country music. But I say this every year because country music, even though it's a very, very classic and sometimes traditional genre, it's always kind of changing.
Yeah.
I mean, even if we look at like the live show scene and the gigs over here, they get sold out so quickly now. And we get a lot more UK artists that aren't just touring in this country. They'll also start touring in Europe. They'll start going over the States a bit more. They're releasing new music. Will you be releasing any more EPs or LPs this year?
I really, really hope so. So I damaged my vocal cords last year in April. So I've kind of been in therapy and working out what's for me with this new condition I've got. So I've not been performing as much, or I've not been in the studio, which has really broken my heart. But I have been sitting on three tracks that I recorded and had produced before this all went down. So I have these three tracks in my back pocket, and I'm not really sure what to do with them. I write so much. I would say that I write lyrics every single day. I write a lot. It's like a diary for me. It's how I process life. And I have got a date in the diary in the studio in February. So I'm like, I'm tentatively saying, yes, more music. I don't know what shape or form that is. I don't know if it's going to be an EP. I don't know if it's going to be an album. But I just really want, because I've not released anything since like June, July last year. I'm itching to get stuff out there because I just love it so much. I love recording and releasing music and the photo shoots and the music videos and everything that comes with it. Yeah, I really hope so.
It is. It's a very creative process because not only you're then having to write the song and have it go from like an acoustic song to then like a fully produced track, but then all the promotion and all the engagement has to go alongside it.
Yeah, I do really love it. Like, I've kind of taken a step back from the stats and the figures because I think you can get really drawn into that.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
I'm trying to be better at just saying, you know what, I love this song, and I know the people that support me already, and if anyone new finds me, great, come along for the ride.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it because, to me, I love singing. I love music. I never got into it for fame, fortune and money. I mean, but I love it. I just love doing it. So,
now, a big debate I tend to kind of hear and kind of tend to have with people, and not just country singers, country music as well, whether it's online or whenever I go to gigs, is what makes country music country. A lot of people say they love bro country, a lot of people say they hate it, a lot of people say, like, if it's not by, like, the Johnny kind of Cash kind of artist, it's not real country, but then they love Ashley McBride. For you, how would you define country music?
My goodness, that's a great question. To me, country is about the songwriting and the storytelling. It's about the emotions you can provoke, or the memories people can relate to. That is what country music is. It's not just a genre. It's a life. And that's why I love it so much.
So would you say now it's kind of more of like a lyrical genre than what kind of sound is underneath it?
I think so, yes. But as you said, I do know people that say if it hasn't got banjo in it, it's not country.
Yeah.
I'm all right with that because I love a bit of banjo. Everyone's going to have their opinions. No, not everyone's going to like what you're doing. And that's fine. That's what makes it so exciting for me. Because if everyone kind of got on board and were like, this is great, there'd be no room to grow.
Yeah.
Where would I go from that? I'd be like, I've completed it. Done that. Let's move on. It satisfy everyone. I think that itches at my people-pleasing needs.
Yeah.
I'm a huge people-pleaser. Something I'm still working on. And that's what makes me to grow, be a better songwriter and a better storyteller and a better producer. And you just keep... I think that's really good for me. In some aspects, not the people pleasing side of it, the trying to grow and be a better person. I think that's really good for me.
Table for two, please. But only one place setting. It's time we had that conversation. I've been letting bring me down. Soft drink for me, please. Alcohol makes me dizzy, and I need to think clearly. As I off-road inside my mind, because I need closure, and I need to let go of what I've let get a hold of me. Living rent-free in a space I've not been so friendly to recently. It's time I sat down with myself. Cobwebs off my mental health and start taking care of me. I know I've been hurt, but I'm so much stronger than this, with so much hope that I've misplaced and love gone to waste. Let's find my current branch by planting seeds. I'm doing this for me. It's time to cut loose from the strings that hold me back. They've also weighed me down, heavy with my mind. I'm taking a step back from the person I once was. I can't keep running just because I'm afraid of what I'll find when I need closure. And I need to let go of what I've let get a hold of me. Living rent free in a space I've not been so friendly too recently. It's time I sat down with myself and cleared the cobwebs off my mental health and start taking care of me. I know I've been hurt, but I'm so much stronger than this, with so much hope that I've misplaced and love gone.
Songwriter, you're also a performer. Over the kind of like the last Christmas holidays, you performed at Chinnery's in Southend.
Yeah,
there seems to be kind of, I'm not over this past year, over these past few months, it kind of seems to be like this kind of country base growing there. I mean, mm-hmm. Holloway Road are from there, Megan Rose, Hannah Paris, they're from Chelmsford. Do you have any kind of like local artists that you've got your eye on?
Megan Rose. So me and Megan are really good friends. We've written together before. We're actually, I think we're writing again this week together. Somewhere in my diary. I think we're writing. Jackson Line. I adore the Jackson Line. Like, everything they do, they can't do wrong. Someone else that I'm really passionate about and I've written with and I adore her is Nora Beckwith.
Nice.
She's also from this area. But everyone you mentioned, huge fans of theirs. I just think we've got this real bubbling talent.
Yeah.
In Essex. Not just in Essex. I might be a bit biased. But in this country scene, there's so much talent coming up through the cracks. And I just can't wait to see what everyone does with it and how they portray country music. Because as you said, there's so much to this genre. You can't be wrong, in a way.
Yeah. And I think it's so nice for Essex to finally be known for something else other than Towie.
Yeah. Yes, although I'm partial to a tan here and there, definitely be known other things.
Yep. Now, on Spotify, when I was researching your discography, on Spotify you have this really interesting playlist of five singles. I'm quite nosy. What's the thought process? What's the concept behind this playlist?
Okay, so it is a concept, EP. It's something, I've got a musician bucket full of little things that I want to do. And so having a song with brackets in the title, that was on my musician bucket list, and having a fade out, because I just think that's so dramatic. I really want to do a concept EP called The Imperfect Recovery. And it all came about after a really bad breakup. No one does heartbreak quite like me. It was supposed to be about growth as a person and kind of what you go through. And I'd gone through this terrible breakup and I wasn't really sure where I was as a person, who I was. And then I found this article online and it had this quote, which I've pinned up on my board. One second, let me grab it for you and then I can read it. One second.
You've got the reading glasses on and everything.
Well, here we go. So I was going to see if I could read it from here, but it was still too far away, so I had to go grab it. This article about mental health. It was called The Imperfect Recovery. Bear in mind, this is all going on at work. I work for the NHS by day. I'm a secretary by day, so I'm at work at the NHS, like, reading this mental health article, because I was in, like, deep. I was in deep, really sad. And this quote says, "Adventure is a trip without a destination. A journey is where the trip itself matters most. And a quest is a trip to accomplish a specific task. And that is the imperfect recovery."
Ooh.
And it kind of like launched this thing within inside me that I was like, right, I'm going to get through this. And I'm going to do it the way that I've got through everything in my life with songwriting. And so I started writing all these songs every single moment or every single kind of experience that I was going through. And it starts off, which is I've Forgotten How to Smile, which I think is the saddest song I've ever written, ever. And I can't believe I released it, if I'm honest with you. That was a really hard song. And I can't play it live, right? This song in 2020. We're now in 2024. I still can't play it live because it's just so heartbreaking. It then goes on to, like, the anger. So Bring It On, Set Me Free is the anger. You've got Little Bit Drunk, which is kind of like the regret almost, the looking back.
Yeah.
And then the last two songs, which I am... Don't get me wrong, because I love all of them. But in terms of my journey as a human being, not as a musician, not as Louise Parker, but as Louise, the last two songs, which are Fool's Paradise and Table for One, are probably the proudest as a songwriter and as a human being, as Louise, because it was about actually reflecting on what I played in my journey. The fact that I kind of kept myself in this loop. I could have maybe said, you know what, I deserve better. This person cheated on me. I deserve better. But instead I kept going round and round going, what did I do wrong? Yeah. This is my fault. How did I get here? And I just kept going round and round and round. So I wrote this song called Table for One, which is about sitting down with myself, which I do in the music video. I sit down with myself in all my different aspects, in the I Forgot How to Smile, in the Little Bit Drunk, in the Bring It On, Set Me Free. And I say, you deserve better than this. Sit down with yourself, take a moment. And I've got Fool's Paradise, which is a song written in third person, but it was about me, but it was just a bit hard to write it at that time. Saying, you know what, you took a chance and I'll never be the same again. But this new person, this person I am now, I've got a wealth of experience under my belt, methods, and hopefully I'll never have to go through anything as traumatizing as that was at that time in my life. But I look back at that girl now and I don't even recognize her. I have no idea who I was 3-4 years ago. That's mad, but that's what Fool's Paradise was about.
Now, Fool's Paradise is one of my favorite tracks on that kind of album. And like you said, that whole album is kind of like how you're dealing with that breakup. For you, what is kind of like the meaning behind that track, and what kind of creative process did you go through?
I remember writing this song really vividly, which is saying something, because I don't remember much of 2020 or the start of 2021. I was really depressed and I had really bad anxiety. And I don't know if it was the medication I was on, but I was really bad. So I don't actually remember. It's like your mind blocks things out to like save you.
Yeah, it is.
People say that when they give birth.
If it's so traumatic, your brain's just like, you know what? She doesn't need to remember this. Let's just move on.
Mad. So I don't remember much of 2020 or writing a lot of these songs, but I do remember writing Fool's Paradise. I remember I had like 20 minutes and then I was going out, stand up paddleboarding with a friend from primary secondary school that I haven't seen in years because she lived in Australia, but she knew I was going through it. And had sent me this message on Instagram out of the blue and was like, do you want to come up stand up paddleboarding? So I had 20 minutes before I was going out. And I remember starting, like, writing 3/4 of Fool's Paradise and going, don't know if that's going to be anything. Went stand up paddleboarding and came back. And then I finished the song. And again, I was kind of like, don't know if that's going to be anything. And then it started to grow on me because the more I played it, I think because it was written in third person. I am talking about myself, but because I wrote it in third person, it's easier. It's almost like I am telling myself.
Yeah.
Like listening to it. It's almost like someone else singing it to me and I can relate to that. I am not blame. I'm not placing that blame because I'm singing it in third person. So that was a really, really therapeutic song for me at the time. And it was about saying, it's going to be your life now. You are no longer that person a year ago. Or I think it was like, I think I was 6-7 months out of the relationship at this time. You're no longer, you will never be that person. You will never laugh and smile the same. But that's okay. I know that sounds really sad at the time.
Now, we're actually going to play the track for our listeners now. So, well, thank you so much for featuring on tonight's show. I've been really, really looking forward to kind of hearing the process behind the EP. And I'm really looking forward as well for if you release any new music this year, which I really, really hope you do. I really, really hope you do. So we've got to play Fool's Paradise for our listeners now. Would you like to introduce the track?
I'd love that. Thank you so much for having me, Madeline. I've really enjoyed this. And it's been a long time in the works. So I'm really glad that we got around to it. And if I release anything, partly back.
Yes.
This has been such fun. But I'm Louise Parker, and you're listening to The Night Shift on Phoenix 98 FM, and this is my latest single called Fool's Paradise.
Just go on and on, on and on. But in broad daylight, someone stole her smile, and she sings, I took a chance in fool's paradise. Keep my advice. I've looked death in the eyes. Love is mine. Thought she had it all, and then some. More than enough to leave their small town behind. But as the cracks start to form, and her crown starts to fall, she cried out for help, only to find there was no one there to save her from her own death.